to Travel Itch Radio, the show that lets you scratch your lust for travel from the friendly confines of your home. I'm your host, Dan Schlossberg, speaking also for vacationing or traveling co-host Anita Stokes-Thomas. Every week at this time, we bring you inside the world of travel, from hotels and tours to cruise ships, planes, trains, and things you can eat or read on your trip. Listen live on iTunes or blogtalkradio.com, or check out the show later on Facebook, on blogtalkradio.com, or on my website, danschlossberg.net. Tonight, in the 339th episode of Travel Itch Radio, we're talking with travel writer and author extraordinaire, Linda Blue. Welcome, Linda, to Travel Itch Radio.
Hi, Dan. I'm so happy to be here.
And I'm glad we finally got together on this. We've been talking about it for a long time.
Really?
And Linda, you wear many hats, travel writer, author, real estate broker. What's your top priority?
Well, I have to tell you that my mission in life now is to get to as many beautiful places as I can before they are gone. And yes, I have a couple more books in me. And I do sell real estate, to pay for my eating habit. But I must say that what I want to do, you know, what my focus is right now is because, you know, I'm not getting any younger and the planet is changing so fast that my focus really is getting around the planet, yes.
Well, how many books have you written and do they all involve travel?
All right, so I've written four books. My first published book was my historical novel, which is set in pre-contact Hawaii, and it spans the time from 1750 to 1819 when Kamehameha the Great rose to power. And it's my proudest accomplishment. It took me about 20 years to research it and have the nerve to publish the Hawaii story. It's a very big story. And to do it respectfully to the Hawaiian people was very important to me. My second novel is The Cowgirl Jumped Over the Moon, which is a new adult novel. And that sprang out of the fact that I was a horse person, hook, line, and sinker. I jumped. I was doing dressage. I was doing eventing. And it was my life. And I got injured and had to give it up. So writing the book was part of my healing process. And I published it 20 years after I wrote it. I rewrote it and edited it and so on. I was a better writer. But the original story, the little heroine, she does everything that I ever wanted to do. So, you know, it was part of my healing process. Then I have two travel books. Lost Angel Walkabout is my collection of travel essays, you know, the trips that were most meaningful to me, most memorable, you know, had the greatest effect upon me. And you would call it travel memoir. But my second travel book is Lost Angel in Paradise, where I take readers to on my 32 favorite day trips on the coast of California. I live in Topanga Canyon, which is about 10 miles from Malibu, and these stories are, you know, I give you a little bit of history, I take you on a great little hike, intermediate, not hard, or a beach stroll, and I take you to a great place to eat afterwards. And if you buy the ebook, you can get live links, you can download it to your phone with a free application on Amazon. And you'll have live links to trailheads and eateries and places that I mention in the book. So I just published that, and it's a lot of fun. And I'm working on, presently, Lost Angel Unleashed, which will be, once again, a collection of travel narratives. But it'll be some of those stories that I didn't tell before, you know, maybe because I thought, oh, they might be a little too politically incorrect or whatever, or I don't want to hurt someone who was alive, or, you know, I had reasons why I didn't publish them. So I'm collecting new stories for it now, and some of them will be older stories, but it'll be a lot of fun. So four books.
When you mentioned Kamehameha, I immediately thought of the beginning of Hawaii 5-0. Isn't that his statue they show?
Oh, yeah. He is the great figure in their history. And this story that I've written is the the point of view of his favorite wife, who was Kahahumanu. And he had 32 wives, so that was no small accomplishment. And she was with him shoulder to shoulder in his rise to power. And she was a very strong and powerful female that I felt was overlooked in Western history. And so I've written this book, hopefully in a way that Western readers can appreciate it and Hawaiians will feel grateful. We would hope.
Okay, 32 wives all at once, or did he have 31 divorces?
Well, he, over the years, had 32 wives and 100 children. So a lot of people claim to be direct descendants of Kamehameha. It's hard to prove they're not, you know.
Good point. And how did he remember all the birthdays and anniversaries?
That's right. Well, they had a lot of parties. They were big on luau's. One thing about the Hawaiian people, they loved it. They loved to dance and sing and party.
Okay. So tell us whether your books are autobiographical or not. Our guest last week, Rachel Linden, said her book, The Enlightenment of Bees, was.
Well, the travel memoir, I would say, is, yes. You know, the first-person stories of my experiences. I don't go into a lot of my personal feelings, but in the one Unleashed, Lost Angel Unleashed, it's going to be more personal. I'm going to allow myself that liberty. You know, I'm going to talk about when I was a little girl in Alaska in high school and growing up there and how it changed me, what a tremendous impact it had on my life and things like that. I have a couple of stories set in Alaska already, but they're not real personal. So, as I say, the reason I'm a lost angel is because I live in L.A., and I'm a lost angel like 14 million others, and I've talked a lot about leaving L.A., but I won't probably ever. I've gotten myself situated nicely here, and I am happy here.
Good to know.
Yeah.
And talking about personal answers, you're like me. You're busy writing books and trying to find time for both family and travel. How do you balance the three?
Okay. So, first of all, I'm really fortunate to have a really excellent partner in life and in real estate. My other half is a real estate broker. And he handles the very stressful aspects, the escrows and negotiations. And I handle the marketing, which I can do on my computer for the most part. So that has worked out very favorably. I've sold real estate all my life, and it's worked out to be a really good thing. And he's very supportive of me and my writing. So with that combination, I have the time and a less stressful environment to meditate and think and write and do what I want to do. So in terms of balancing my writing schedule, that's difficult because if you're not marketing your books, nobody's going to know about them. So I have to give a certain amount of time to book marketing. So I give maybe 25% of my energies to book marketing. But the travel, I give 50% of my energies to travel and getting places where I want to go. And then there's that other book in me that wants to be written and is just crying out and saying, Linda, Linda, when are you going to get to me? And I'm working on it. But, you know, I do feel that right now travel is my focus, and I'm writing lots of travel articles and, you know, things like that.
Okay. So, Linda,
let me just mention one thing.
Go ahead. To
balance it out, because outfitters, when I query outfitters, I don't talk to them about my novels. They're not interested in that. They're interested in what I can do for them. So I created a web page that's strictly dedicated to travel. It's called Lost Angel Adventures. And then my other website that I've had for a dozen years, lindabalooauthor.com, has my novels on it and other information. So I separated the two, and I think that was very effective.
That's what I do, too. I separate baseball and travel since I write both, and it's good to keep them apart. Together
right.
when you can, but apart most of the time. So, Linda, as a travel journalist, please tell our listeners about your three favorite places and why.
Okay, so first off, I am an adventure travel writer. I love to be outdoors. And I love river rafting, horseback riding, hiking, that sort of thing. So my very favorite, I think, trip that I've taken was in Africa. It was fabulous. I went to Botswana, Zimbabwe, and Zambia with Overseas Adventure Travel, which is a wonderful company that caters to 55-plus people. And I just loved staying in my own little tent house, a luxury tent house. It was wonderful, and the wilderness camps were great, and Botswana, of course, is the poster child for wildlife conservation, and it was just fabulous. And then rafting the Grand Canyon was a life-changing experience for me. I really, really loved going deeper and deeper and deeper into time, you know, into the millennium, and being totally unplugged. And in that circumstance, we camped out in tents on sandy beaches, and I was able to sleep under the stars, which is something that I love to do. And it brings me back to Alaska. I mean, I'm in many, many, many places, but I have never been to any place more majestic than Alaska. And it did affect me tremendously. It made me who I am, an adventure travel writer. I rafted the Tatchinchini River from Yukon to the Gulf of Alaska, which is a 140-mile run through the largest roadless wilderness area in North America. And it was a life-changing experience, because when I started out on that journey, I was a traveler looking for adventure and all that sort of thing. But when I was done with that, I was an environmentalist, and I am an environmentalist, and I care about the future of our planet.
We're talking with travel writer and author Linda Ballou. Linda, travel writers can travel alone or on group fam trips. Do you do both?
Actually, I don't do either. I've taken a couple of fam trips, but I don't like to be that controlled, and I don't like, you know, having to write about things that I'm not necessarily, you know, loving. So what I do is I query outfitters or tour companies that are in a region that I want to go, and I make certain it's a trip I want to take. And then I approach them and tell them, you know, all that I can do for them. I become like a mini publicist for them. And so my approach is a renegade approach to travel writing, but my goal is to get fabulous trips that I really want to take that I couldn't afford to do otherwise. So that's what I do. It's a little different than what I don't approach magazines first and ask for assignment letter. I don't usually. Sometimes I deal with publicists, but not often. So, and I have a little book called How to Make Travel Writing Work for You. It's on Kindle. It's 99 cents. I've given talks about my approach and how it's different from most people's approach, and why it's so wonderful. Okay.
Okay. Do you find there are extra hardships for women traveling alone?
No, as a matter of fact, I really don't. And in fact, after I have, like, I'm ideally for me, like, I'm going to Australia with Oates in January. So I'm going to have a 15-day trip with them. But then after that, I'm taking a week on my own dime and going to Tasmania. And I'm really looking forward to being alone. I love traveling solo. I love being able to, you know, stop wherever I want to stop and, you know, just not be communicating with a lot of people. And being a writer, it's an introspective thing, and you kind of need to be alone. So you do need to keep your wits about you when you're traveling alone. I think you don't want to be silly. I mean, when I'm in town, I'm paying attention, you know. I'm not putting myself in precarious places, you know, positions, vulnerable positions. You know, I think that women do need to do that, whether they're traveling or, you know, if they're in L.A. or New York or anywhere, particularly in New York. I was a mark in New York. A man was following me from the Guggenheim. I saw him at the Guggenheim, and then I saw him at the Modern Museum of Art. He was watching me. You have to be paying attention, you know, when you're traveling solo.
What advice would you give to someone considering an international trip?
I would do as much research and lining things up online ahead of time, as much as I can do, so that I don't waste time when I'm on the trip. Like on this Australia trip, I wanted to squeeze in the Blue Mountains, which would, you know, was take a train trip up to the Blue Mountains, and I only had 24 hours. So I thought, wait a minute, I can't be dragging my luggage around. So I made arrangements to store my luggage in the Sydney airport. So I'm not dragging luggage. I can really make good time, and I can really make the best of those 24 hours. So I think you can do so much online. And, of course, research before you go. Know where you're going, you know, so that you don't, you know, waste time, valuable time, when you're trying to see the sights, you know.
Brenda, are there places on the planet you would avoid, or are you open to almost anything?
I am definitely not open to almost anything. I'm not interested. I'm not an investigative journalist. I'm not interested in going to war-torn countries and very sad countries. I feel for people who live in them, but I don't think that that's, you know, where I want to go. I'm very selective about where I go. I'm into natural wonders. I mean, I got to go to Torres del Paine's in South America. That was very high on my list. You can tell I love natural wonders more than big cities. I mean, Buenos Aires was a lovely city. I enjoyed being there. But generally, I'm looking for those natural wonders on the planet. You know, I just came back from Yosemite. Everybody's been there but me, but thank goodness I got to go. I mean, it's just so immense and immutable and beautiful. I mean, how could you not be inspired by it?
Good point. I've been there several times, really enjoyed it. Let's talk about air travel a bit. Air travel used to be a whole lot easier. Do you find it a hassle these days?
Absolutely, and it really slows me down. I really have to want to go to a place. Ideally, what I do is one big international trip a year where you've got those, you know, horrible 13 to 20-hour flights, and two domestic trips, because the United States is got so much to see, and I certainly haven't seen it all. And so, you know, I've been going to national parks that I've missed. I went to Zion and Bryce in the spring, and you know, I mean, there's just a lot in our country to see. So two domestic trips, which I can easily do, you know, either drive to or take a hop, you know, from Burbank Airport, which instead of an international airport. And one big international trip a year is good for me. Because I have to have time to write about this stuff, and I do have books that I want to write. So I'm choosy.
I can relate. We're talking with travel writer and author Linda Ballou. You must have many memories, good and bad, from your time on the road. Would you share some?
Okay. So I think probably the almost worst experience I had was when I was almost deported from Tahiti. And this was long before I was a travel writer. I was 28. It was my first big trip, and I was really kind of naive. And I got... because I was from L.A., they were watching me. As I say, you know, not only do crooks watch you, but the police notice you too. So they thought I was, they watched me the whole week, 2 weeks I was there, and decided that I was a mule carrying drugs from L.A. because I had, yes, because I had talked to some French people who were in the harbor on a boat at the beach, and they had handed me a joint, and now that marijuana is legal, that's no big deal, right? But at the time, it was, and they grilled me. I was like, I thought I was in Casablanca or something, because they were speaking French, and I had an interpreter. It was just horrible. But they finally started laughing and let me go, and I was so angry with them. But then the other, second worst thing that happened to me was a horseback trip up in the High Sierras out of Bishop, and this was on the backside of the John Muir Wilderness. Instead of the front door of Yosemite, it's you go out of Bishop. So it was at about 10,000 feet, and I'd been on, it was the fourth night of a five-day trip, and I was in altitude, and I was feeling very lightheaded, and I just simply tripped and fell into a log that went into my ribs and broke,
oh.
Well, fractured two of my ribs. So then One of the cowboys, one of the guides, had to ride out all night to get, you know, I had to ride on a paper bag. Yes, I authorized the helicopter.
Okay.
And so, but he had to ride out. We had two Wrangler guides, and he saved my life, really, because if I had broken my ribs and had punctured a lung, you wouldn't be talking to me. But the fact is, the helicopter came, I was airlifted out, and it was a happy ending. So those were my two worst experiences. And my best, once again, I think I loved Africa so much. I loved tracking the lions, and I felt I was really out there. And I also really loved a horse trip I took in Ecuador from Hacienda to Hacienda on the Inca Trail. That was an incredible adventure, and I really, really loved that.
International travel involves different languages, money, food, and customs. Do you enjoy these differences, or is it another hassle for you?
No, of course I do. I mean, that's what it's all about, is getting, you know, out of your comfort zone and trying new things. I mean, that's, you know, getting out of your routine changes you, you know. And that's one of the wonderful things about travel, is it does break your routine. And good travel gives you a new perspective. You know, good travel changes you and expands your universe. And I love that about travel.
Some foreigners frown on Americans for political reasons. Have you run into that at all?
Absolutely. You know, I have Canadian friends who are absolutely appalled about what's going on here in the United States. And when I was at Tenaya Lodge in Yosemite, I was talking to a couple from UK. And, I mean, they just find Trump unbearable, and it just goes on and on that, you know, we've got the ugliest American as our president, and it's downright embarrassing around the world, and it's not doing us any good, that's for sure.
Okay. How about your favorite places, cities, countries, hotels, and favorite airlines?
Well, I like Alaska Airlines just because I've flown on them all my life, and they're very reliable and good, and they have a nice awards program that I've used over and over again. So I think I like Alaska Airlines. I loved Tenaya Lodge, where I stayed up in Yosemite. It's a full-tilt resort with indoor pools, outdoor pools, hot pools, full, you know, huge spa. But the nicest thing about it is it's just so much fun. They have this jackalope bar and eating area where everybody congregates, and you just meet people from around the world. And it was just great fun. And also it's just on the South Gate entrance of Yosemite, so it's very conveniently located for explorations in the park. And it was fabulous. I can't recommend it highly enough. I just posted an article about my experience there if anyone's interested. It's on I have an adventure travel column on the National Association of Baby Boomer. And, you know, you can go there and you'll see it. It's You Must Come and See Yosemite. Yeah.
Okay. Good point. You must have least favorites, too, Linda. Cities, countries, hotels, and airlines you'd avoid like the plague. Care to share?
Let's see. I was on, I think it was Air Mexico. I just know that one time I was flying back from Mexico, and we actually did a touch and go on LAX. You know, I mean, we actually touched the wheels, and then they lifted off again and said, we're not landing here. We're going to Orange County, you know. I mean, it was, and they had circled around for, you know, 45 minutes or an hour before they did that little maneuver. And I think it was Air Mexico. It's been a while ago, but that was probably my most silly flying experience. I haven't had terrible experiences with the airlines, like being hung up for, you know, 10 hours in an airport. That hasn't happened to me. But what you need to download the app of the airline when you're traveling. You need to have it on your phone because, you know, they change the gates at very short notice. And if you have the app on your phone, you'll see it before it even goes up on the board. And lots of times you're running around trying to find the board. You know what I mean? So I think to get ahead of that game, you want to always download the app of the airline that you're traveling with. What else? I used to go to Mexico, not too fond of going there now. I feel, you know, it's terribly corrupt, and I've had incidents there that have made me uncomfortable. So not hot to go to Mexico, and there's many, many other places I haven't been, but I don't know. I think that's about it. I don't have anything terribly horrible to say about anywhere I've been.
That's good. Good attitude. One of the big issues we share as freelance travel writers is accepting subsidized travel from destinations, hotels, and airlines. I believe your first obligation is to your readers, so it really shouldn't matter. What about your thoughts?
Okay. First of all, when you're writing about your experience, whether you're hosted or not, I think you should just be honest. I mean, you can do it in a way if there was something like instead of saying, you know, say you were on a jungle tour or whatever, and instead of saying, you know, the Mazis dive bomb me mercilessly, you know, you can say, bring lots of bug juice. You know, you can say the truth. You can prepare people for the realities of a given experience without being snarky. And I would say, don't be snarky, travel writers. You know, if you want to get trips from these people, you know, they're going to read your article. The outfitter, the next tour group you're approaching is going to read your article. And if you're saying really nasty things about them, I mean, how do you think they're going to hire you? I think you can, as I say, couch bad things in a way that is not harmful, and that the outfitter, if they're honest with themselves, will understand why you have to say that. And, you know, be glowing about the things that are wonderful about the trip.
Okay, speaking about things that are wonderful, your work is quite wonderful. Have you won some awards that you can talk about?
I'm proud of the fact that I won a Solus Award from Traveler's Tales, which is the largest publishing company for travel books, travel narratives. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but they're headquartered in San Francisco. And they put out, you know, hundreds of books, travel books. And I had written a piece about writing in the hoof prints of Isabel Bird, who is someone that I would like to expand into a novel. She was a plucky English woman who rode in 1865 through the Rocky Mountains solo. And she was just an incredible woman. Anyway, I got an award for that one. And my Cowgirl Jumped Over the Moon was a finalist in the Equus Awards, the Equus Film Fest. The founder of Equus Film Fest chose my book as her favorite in 2017, and I was very, very proud of that. Wainani, A Voice from Old Hawaii, has won Indie Excellence Awards and Reader's Favorites, and I get really good reviews. You know, I don't make $1 million selling my books, but I get really good reviews for my work, and that pleases me so much. Makes me feel that
I've got to do my close because the English lady is saying 90 seconds. So
all right,
I want to say
thank you so much.
Our special guest tonight has been travel writer and author Linda Ballou. Thank you, Linda, for joining Travel It Radio. It was fun.
Thank you, Dan.
Okay, and listeners, next week, that's it for this edition, but next week we'll talk with Brian W. Smith, an American spearheading efforts to preserve Saint-Germain-des-Prés, a Parisian church dating back to the 10th century. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg speaking also for the absent Anita Stokes-Thomas, saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night.